This year in the upcoming Summer Olympics, you will not find this event, negotiating, individual program, freestyle negotiating, how about negotiating non-negotiable issues or time trial negotiated hostage release? No, these events are not in the Olympics. As much as the World Sporting Competition is declared to be an agent of world peace, actually, negotiating peace, that's just too hard. I mean, there's not enough people that can actually do it, let alone medal in the event. You couldn't get enough people to have an actual event. Daniel Shapiro is the founder and director of the Harvard International Negotiation Program and associate professor of psychology at Harvard. If there were to be a team of negotiators, he might be the one to assemble it. In a new book out today, Negotiating the Non-Negotiable, How to Resolve Your Most Emotionally Charged Conflicts, Daniel Shapiro joins me now. Welcome.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
You start with the hard stuff first in this book, that's for sure.
Life is hard.
Yeah. What, first of all, drew you to this? Because you do seem to be drawn to the really hard stuff, talking about different views of the sacred, for instance. You spend a lot of time in the Middle East in the Israel-Palestine conflict, which seems completely unresolvable at this point.
We are all negotiating all the time. You know, since the day you were born and cried for milk, we've all been negotiating. It's how do we negotiate most effectively? Looking at our world right now, there's no lack of issues that one could try to address in better means. My own work began in Eastern Central Europe, right at the turn of communism, looking to help the transition there from a closed to an open society without violence. How do you do it? Is it even possible?
And can you shift from, say, personal, for lack of a better word, tribal disputes that determine territorial issues on the ground to a more secular sense of shared values that get you beyond those kinds of things, which I think is part of what the Middle East conflict is about? It's not unlike conflicts that take place right here in the United States.
I think there's some core principles that are relevant, whether it is around the Israeli-Palestinian conflict or whether it's around my wife and I trying to deal with a conflict in our own lives. You know, so just as an example, in the book, one of the big concepts I talk about, I call it the tribes effect. And it is an adversarial mindset that we tend to get into when we're in conflict with somebody else. And the problem is, once you get in that mindset, it is very difficult to get out.
And that means you declare your identity to be specific and immovable, and that's what you have to really change.
I am right. You are wrong. I am going to defend my case. I am going to close my ears to yours. And whether it's the Israeli-Palestinian conflict or, you know, to some degree, my wife and I, again, in that conflict situation, this is a problematic mindset. You know, in the personal situation, the moment we get into that, my wife and I get into that conflict, this person who I'm married to, who I love, this beautiful person, all of a sudden, she becomes the enemy, you know, and that's a problem.
As a psychological goal, how do you change a person's view of victory in a negotiation from a verdict on their own personal identity to the success of finding common ground for the group or for the pair?
Try to understand the other side's perspective. You know, as simple as this concept sounds, it is incredibly powerful and incredibly difficult to do. When I get called in by government leadership, by businesses, and so on, invariably the first thing I hear from them is, "How do you deal with someone who is utterly irrational? You know, how do you negotiate?" And once I hear those words, that's the telltale sign for me that this might just be negotiable, because they're seeing things through their own perspective, not through the perspective of the other side.
Is that possible with a group like ISIS, where you step into their shoes and look at them with James Foley's head in their hands kind of thing?
I mean, what ISIS does is reprehensible. The question is, do we want to negotiate with ISIS? Either formally, probably not, informally, through some back channels, possibly. And if that's the case, absolutely I want to understand their mindset. In order to influence anybody, the most powerful way to do so is to understand what is going on in that other person's mind. If I can understand why the leadership of ISIS or some of the followers are doing what they're doing, I'm much more capable to influence them.
Is it a concession to negotiate? Often in geopolitics, adversaries view it as a concession to even sit down at the table with the other side. And that sometimes is the case in disputes between little kids.
Yeah, no. I think that's absolutely right. So I think I would certainly not advise President Obama to sit down and negotiate with the leader of ISIS. That would be, you know, just the worst negotiation mistake ever. I'm sure he wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Because it's ultimately legitimizing that leadership. On the other hand, might you get a third level, unofficial individual from the United States to somehow talk back channel with somebody from ISIS to better understand what their motivations are, why they're actually doing what they're doing? That's a wholly different situation. As to the question of conceding, I think people are scared to death to negotiate. There was a study done by some of my colleagues at Harvard Business School showing that, in fact, most CEOs, most business people, are anxious about negotiation, you know, negotiation phobia. In reality, negotiation does not mean giving in. If you and I are negotiating, it means we're sitting down, I'm trying to understand where you're coming from, I'm listening, I'm trying to find some sort of outcome that can work for you, that can work for me.
Your wife is not the enemy, right?
She sometimes thinks I'm the enemy.
She thinks, yeah, right. And you wrote a book about negotiating the non-negotiable, and you use her as an example. Is it possible to teach the political courage to see your enemy's viewpoint, which is what has to happen to succeed in negotiation?
Within a safe space, you know, within a safe space. So much of my work is bringing different leadership together and behind closed doors, having them have the conversations that are very different than the public conversations. And to the question of my wife, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, definitely.
So I mean, do I see her as the enemy? Is she me? There's this concept that I talk about in the book. I call it vertigo. It is this notion that we in a conflict situation can get so consumed in our conflict that we cannot see outside of it. You know, we get into the conflict at home and then we go to work. Our body is there at work, but our mind is still at home. That's vertigo. And I think there's a danger, whether it's in the personal situations and personal conflicts or in the international, that we get so sucked into that swirling tornado of vertigo that we lose track of what our purpose is, where we actually want to go.
Daniel Shapiro is the founder and director of the Harvard International Negotiation Program and associate professor of psychology at Harvard Medical School, McLean Hospital. His book, Negotiating the Non-Negotiable, is out today. Thanks so much.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.